Welcome to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Two Writing Teachers is a meeting place for a world of reflective writers. Here on the podcast, we are excited to talk about ways to create, lead, and sustain joyful and productive writing workshops. My name is Stacey Schubitz, and I'm here with my colleague Melanie Meehan. Let's work together to inspire and empower students to be competent, brave, and confident writers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Melanie Meehan. I'm here with my colleague, Stacey Schubitz, and we are excited to be talking about Greenbelt writing today. It is such an important thing at the beginning of the year to be thinking, what do we really want for writers in classrooms? And I love this whole concept because I think it really hits at what we really do want when we think about the writers that we're working with. So hi, Stacey.
Hi. I'm really excited to be talking about this today. And last night, as I was settling in for bed, I was reminded of something that Kate Roberts and Maggie Beatty Roberts wrote in the foreword of Welcome to Writing Workshop. And I'm going to just tee it up with the fact that this is part of a foreword, but I think that this sentence is something that has stayed with me, that felt incredibly lovely as a author, but really stayed with me in my thinking about what we want Writing Workshop to be. And they wrote, "And yet we are also so glad that we have this book now, to reset our focus on our North Stars, to remember what is true and precious about a classroom full of young writers, their energy and creativity and abilities to write their own world into being."
It's like, it captures it, right? It's like,
it does.
We have standards and we have genres and we have units and we're all thinking about those, but at the same time, we want writers to love writing. Like, and that's such a great capture. I feel like it would be really helpful to just talk about Ralph Fletcher and joywrite for a minute. If I'm not wrong, he really coined that term. Is that?
That's correct. I went back and looked at joywrite. It's right there on page 39 that he proposed this new concept of greenbelt writing, which is raw, unmanicured, and uncurated writing. And it's informal. It's writing that's in the wild. It is low stakes writing, and it's the kind that kids feel comfortable doing when there's no one watching.
Having worked through a classroom slice of life challenge and watched what happens with that and the energy that happens when kids can just have the opportunity to fill a notebook, there is a difference between what kids will write and create and the bravery and the courage and the risks that they'll take when they're just given the opportunity to write without the pressure of a product.
Right. And without the pressure of a grade, because kids, no one wants to be graded and judged all of the time. I think it really matters that kids have the opportunity to play with words that aren't going to be graded. And notice I use the word play there because play is the work of childhood. And we want writing to be part of that work, but it has to be playful in order for it to feel good sometimes. You know, it just doesn't always have to have a grade attached to it. And I think that that's why this concept is really important, because there's such power in this raw type of writing, and it's personal, it's joyful, it can be whimsical, it can be funny, but it comes from the kid. It's not an assignment that they're doing for somebody else.
I guess I want to be really clear that when I picture greenbelt writing, and this is where, you know, feel free to jump in, and I wish that Ralph were here and he could jump in too. Mm-hmm. I picture greenbelt writing in addition to a writing workshop. Mm-hmm. So it's not saying an instead of.
No.
It's not saying, you know, on one day during writing workshop, you do this. I watched my friend Kristen do really what was greenbelt writing for the month of April when she was doing the classroom slice of life. And that was, the kids came in and for the first 10 to 15 minutes at the end of right after recess, they engaged in writing in their journals for classroom slice of life. And it was greenbelt writing 100%. They were doing all sorts of different things. And I'll say more about some of the things that I watched them write. But I would also just kick it back to you, Stacey, as far as where else you could envision Greenbelt writing happening during the year. And I can say a few things too. Just instructional minutes are at such a premium, and where do you fit it in?
So there are a few places that I think it can be fit in. Some are from my own experience before this term was ever coined by Ralph, that I was doing, and some are just ideas that I've gotten from his book or from other teachers. The first one that I have is a classroom notebook. My final year in New York, we had a classroom notebook. It went home with a different kid every day, and it was kind of like a journal, but some kids really got humorous about it and made it just this funny thing, and we would read the entry from the previous night at our morning meeting. It was
Hold on. Like, pause, because I, like, what an epiphany moment for me. So it wasn't like every kid had their own notebook. You had like a classroom shared notebook that was collaborative that way.
Yes. And they named it Sean, S-H-A-U-N. I don't know why they named it Sean, but they did. And yeah, this was this great notebook. And we did it all year. And I still have it somewhere in my house. I had found it. I unearthed it when we moved. And I keep in touch with a lot of those kids. I mean, those kids are now in their mid to upper 20s. It was just this beautiful thing that, like, everyone wanted to take Sean home with them and write in it and share their little piece. And as the kids in the classroom got more comfortable with each other throughout the year, it just became more playful and funny. And it was still respectful, but, you know, it just got to be a more fun thing. So that's one idea.
It's an amazing way of building community. Like, again, thinking about the beginning of the year and the efforts that teachers make to develop community and the different things that happen and go on to develop that, what an amazing practice for building community. I love that.
I think it may have come from my responsive classroom training, because I did that the year, like, or the school year following the summer where I did my training, but I don't know. I'd love to take it as my own brilliant idea, but I'm sure I was inspired by somebody.
Amazing.
Another idea that I tried out that year, we did Poetry Fridays, where we would have our closing circle as a place where people could share poetry. And I think we had maybe 5 people sign up each week. And I mean, this was my big year class. This was my class of 32. Basically, kids could either sign up to read a poem they admired, or they could sign up to read a poem that they wrote themselves. And those poems were written outside of the writing workshop at other points during the day. So it allowed them to have an audience, an authentic audience, and just to create something that was fun for them. And I really stress poetry throughout the year. And I think that that's why that worked.
I want to just emphasize something there, because it's something that I don't know that I think about enough with poetry. Amy Ludwig Vanderwater gets me thinking about this more. Mm-hmm. Is the importance of, or the power of, kids reading poetry, like finding a favorite poem and making it their own by reading it and practicing it and getting really good at being fluent in a poem that somebody else has written, but that they share. And I think it's so powerful for building fluency, but then also inspiring poets. So they don't even, it becomes like a subliminal mentor text almost.
Yes.
Right? It's like subconscious getting into a writer's mind of poetry when somebody knows it so well that they're reading it that way. And it has a powerful effect on a writer.
Mm-hmm. I'll share one other thing that I did up in Rhode Island, and I don't remember what I called it, but I know I blogged about it on Two Writing Teachers when Two Writing Teachers was a young blog. But basically, we had time that was unstructured outside of writing workshop where students would have 10 minutes to just write. There were kids who needed, I don't want to say a prompt, but like some type of like stimulus to help their mind go. And like I would put a few things up on the whiteboard as suggestions of things to write about, but the final suggestion was always, or something of your own. And it was uninterrupted time at the end of it. Students usually shared with someone else. There was the option not to share if it was super personal. I think only one or two kids would ever like really write something deeply personal during that time. But it was just uninterrupted time that was low stakes in their writer's notebook, just for building, you know, stamina as a writer and for doing more writing that was unstructured and unassigned.
I think the important thing, I mean, there were a couple important things that you just said there. One mm-hmm. is that the free write option is super powerful, but so is giving kids the choice of a prompt. And I feel mm-hmm. like we know that as people who write in the Two Writing Teachers Slice of Life Challenge every month, right? Like sometimes you're just like, I don't have anything, just give me a prompt. And mm-hmm. it's really helpful to have that. And just like it's helpful for adults, it's helpful for kids. But the more, you almost think of a prompt as a scaffold, right?
It is. Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, it's something that's going to get me started on this process that's hard. And what's going to happen is because I've started it, I've initiated writing and I'm building stamina. And, you know, for some kids, and this is not an unimportant thing for our younger writers, it's building fine motor skills that they really need to have. So mm-hmm. just the act of writing and writing something with more volume than maybe they do during other parts of the day builds those fine motor skills that are super important when they're going to write their pieces during writing workshop that are the more product-oriented pieces.
Mm-hmm. And I would just tuck in one other tip with that, Melanie, and I know you'll probably agree, but giving kids paper choice at that time, especially in the primary classrooms, you know, having a buffet of paper choices allows them to pick what's going to work for them. And, you know, perhaps they're going to spend part of the time illustrating in service of their writing. And I think that that's not only okay, but it should be honored.
Yeah. It's almost like getting into the what do you need for free writing? Like, what mm-hmm. are the materials to get going? And we'll get into that. But I think it's kind of fun to think about the different options that do exist for it. And on that note, let's take a quick break. And we will come back in just a little bit with other ideas about Greenbelt writing and its importance in the lives of young writers.
Did you know you can purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore? With Libro FM, you can pick from more than 275,000 audiobooks, including bestsellers and recommendations from real booksellers. You'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know the name. But you'll be part of a different story, one that supports your local community. If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to squeeze more reading into your busy life. Listen with the free Libro FM app while you do your chores, walk the dog, or relax at home. If you already love audiobooks and need to know what to listen to next, check out recommendations from the people who know best, booksellers. Two Writing Teachers podcast listeners can take advantage of this special offer. Get two audiobooks on Libro FM for the price of one, $14.99, with your first month of membership with code TWTPOD. That's TWTPOD. Offer only valid for new members in Canada and the United States.
And we are back. Stacey, I know that you had a couple other ideas for ways that you can tuck in Greenbelt writing activities throughout the school year. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. One other way to do this, well, of many, is to have independent writing projects as something that happens a few times of the school year. And I understand that in many curriculum development workshops that people don't always think that this is important, but it really is. If we're going to make an effort for kids to have more time to do Greenbelt writing, then we need to have time for independent writing projects. Of course, that's not a free-for-all. This is not a time when kids are just doing whatever they want and the teacher's not teaching. There is instruction involved. And I'll just refer back, and I'll link it in the show notes, to the podcast I did about independent writing projects at the end of the previous school year. And there are lots of tips for how you might infuse this during the year. But basically, you're setting aside a week, 2 if you have it, but like, let's be real, most people don't. But like a week for kids to work on a project of their choice. And it usually comes after you finish a unit of study, and then you're giving that writing workshop time over to that independent writing project that each kid is working on.
I'm going to just jump in there and underscore the value of doing this, because schedules are sort of moral documents, right? And we make time, or people make time, for what is really important. I will say that once you start doing independent writing projects for a week in between units, you will see the value of them, and you'll be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't do this before, because it just adds so much energy both to the end of a writing unit and also to the beginning of the next unit. So it really makes up for the time that you put into it.
I think I've always been lucky enough to either work in schools or work with schools where teachers have some say of what their units look like throughout the year. I would just encourage you that, like, when you're planning out your year, to tuck in a couple weeks at least that you're going to have for these projects. And of course, kids can continue working on them on their own time, because if it's their writing and it's Greenbelt writing and they're excited about it, then they're going to want to do it because they're passionate about that project. But really just try and make the time for it early on. So you know the Classroom Slice of Life Story Challenge originated in my classroom with my fourth graders. It has clearly morphed since that first year in 2008. And I'm always shocked and humbled that like there are kids who are still doing this. But basically that was Greenbelt writing. I didn't know it. It was, you know, for me, and I've written about this and I won't get into it here, but for me, it was therapeutic because I was mourning the loss of my grandmother and also just needed to like get my kids going with writing, because not all of them were writing in their writer's notebooks. Not all of them wanted to write. And I just thought, okay, here's a kick in the pants. Let's just do this. And it worked. So I know that it's been happening in your school. Can you talk a little bit about what that has looked like, what you've witnessed, Melanie?
Yeah, well, what I'll say is that April is when we have the Classroom Slice of Life Story Challenge, but that's a construct. It doesn't have to be in April. It can be now, where you introduce it as a practice. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, I guess my favorite one to think about is a friend of mine who is a second grade teacher who started it in April with her second graders. And I walked into her classroom. She said, you have to come and see what these kids are doing. Like, you have to come in and look at this. And I was like, okay, like, I'll be there. And she's like, you have to come at 12 o'clock. And I, you know, she goes, you have to see how they come in from recess. So I showed up at 12 o'clock and they all came in and they were kind of, you know, jittering about recess. And she put on some music and kind of one by one, they sat down and she didn't say anything. They sat down and they just started getting into their notebooks and their writing. There was no classroom management that was evident, or there was there was no directive coming from her. Mm-hmm. It was them knowing what they were doing and how they were doing it. So all of these notebooks opened up and every kid was kind of busily engaged in their work. And there were pieces where kids were extending their stories that they had been working on. There were pieces where kids were working on some comics and graphic novels. There were pieces where kids were just drawing and sketching out and playing with ideas and creating worlds. There were a couple kids who were working on songs and writing songs. Mm-hmm. It was the coolest thing because everybody was doing their own thing. Nobody was asking how to spell words. Nobody was asking if it was good. Like, they were just engaged and invested in the writing that they were doing. That was low stakes, but super important.
I love hearing that, because that is the essence of Greenbelt writing, which Ralph Fletcher argues in his book, Joywrite, that it should be 75% of all of the writing that kids do. And that number feels super high. But when we build in time, like an after recess time, then that time is often spent like dealing with squabbles and other things and getting everyone calmed down. Why not put on some music and get everyone calm that way and just do some writing? I mean, that's beautiful. I really love hearing about that, which I think can then transfer into what are some other times of the day that we can do this greenbelt writing, that we can hand over and say, this is an option, this is a choice. And the first thing I think of is, you know, morning work and soft starts, rather than handing out a worksheet for kids to complete or a do now problem that's up on the board, giving kids choice of how to start their day and making writing a choice.
I think that anytime there's a transition also works.
Mm-hmm.
The soft starts in the morning is a little bit tricky because, like, almost by definition for me, I want soft starts to have choice. And I'm not sure that initially kids would choose writing because initially they don't see the joy in it. Like, it takes a little while to develop that aura that Kristen's classroom has where they love it.
Like, agreed. That's probably not going to be something in the first 2 months of school, maybe the second month if you're really lucky and you're magic. You know, it's not going to be a choice in those first 2 months, but it could grow into one.
It could grow into one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that any time that there is a transition in the day, writing is a really nice way to have people come in and settle into their being and change their brain from a transition time into a, I'm ready to learn it. It, like, I kind of picture all of those great chemicals coming through the brain and softening the brain and getting you into a place of reflection and learning. And it's a beautiful thing to do that. So if you have a specials period that you're coming back from, you come in and you sit down and maybe that's your 10 to 15 minutes to find time for some greenbelt writing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you build it into snack time. It's a working snack and not a working snack. Don't call it a working snack. I'll call it a writing snack.
Mm-hmm.
I usually, when I sit down to write, you know, truth be told, I have a snack.
we won't talk about all the chocolate that I consume in order to do my best writing. But no, it's totally true that that is something that we do as professional writers. And it's something that kids can do as well.
Right. Depends on the snack. Like, those honey mustard work really well for the computer keys. But it does depend on the snack. And I have to pick them carefully. But I think that there is that option. I also wonder about even waiting for buses. Like, yeah, some kids are going to get more time that way than others, but that seems like it's a time when I walk around and kids are watching a video or, I don't know, just not doing as creative and constructive things as maybe they could.
So basically you're saying that they should create instead of consume.
Create instead of consume. I love that.
Yes, that's a mantra with one of my children is, I want you to create, not consume, whether it's art, writing, or something else.
And maybe it's looking at your day with that lens of, when are kids creating and when are kids consuming and how can I shift to more creating?
I like that. I am going to throw in one other possibility for a time to throw this into the schedule. In several of the school districts that I've worked with, they are departmentalized starting in fourth grade. Kids are changing, the teachers teaching three writing workshops in a day, which feels very much like middle school, but it is not middle school. They are just learning how to change classes and what have you. And I saw one teacher who was giving a prompt to the kids to help them settle down when I was in the classroom. And I suggested giving several ideas and then a free write. And think that really changed the way that kids came into the classroom because they were excited to try out whatever was up there or to work on something of their own. It wasn't a behavior management strategy anymore. It was a, I'm going to give you this time and you get to write. And I think that shift of you have to write versus you get to write is a really powerful shift.
Well, have to and get to is always a powerful shift in my life. Like, you know, when you shift from a have to a get to, there is a shift in the energy that you're willing to put into that. And I love the idea of kids coming into their classrooms who are departmentalizing and sitting down and doing that. Sometimes mm-hmm. those periods are long. And if you break it up with 10 to 15 minutes, and again, like, it isn't a lot of instructional minutes to put into it. I think that mm-hmm. that's something to really think about. It's not like, oh, we're looking for this big chunk of time. And again, you might be surprised with the positive effects that you get and the way that it helps other parts of the day be more efficient.
I want to throw out a few more suggestions of where we can work this into the school day. Is that okay? I'm not going to talk.
Awesome with the suggestions today. Keep them coming.
I think it's just because I was doing a lot of this way back when, and Ralph put a name on it and made it way better and more organized to help people think through it than I ever could have. When a plan box is complete during the writing workshop and a student has completed their whole plan, hey, you get to work on your independent writing, your backup work, whatever it is. Another time is to create a Fun Friday. I think that Fun Fridays are often more of that consuming type of thing where kids are watching something. Well, let them create something. Maybe they're even writing in service of creating a video that other people can watch. The end products, I mean, there's so many different ideas that kids can create. It just doesn't have to be like a piece of writing. It can go digital as well. Lunch bunches are great if you want to create a lunch bunch where you invite kids who are interested in having not a working lunch, but like a writing lunch with you. That's a great time to do it. And finally, and this, you know, is near and dear to my heart, an extended day program. In the New York City public schools, they implemented an extended day program when I was teaching there, and it was either used for remediation or enrichment. I had a class that only a couple of kids required remediation that year. And the rest of them, I offered the choice. If you'd like to come in at 8 o'clock in the morning before the school day starts, we're going to work on writing. And I will not tell the whole story here, but it basically led to a donors choose proposal, which led to publishing an actual book of their writing called Deal With It. Powerful words from smart young writers or something like that was the subtitle. And that led to them doing their own PR campaign for it, which was like completely awesome. And I mean, we had book signings, we were on the news. I mean, it was a really exciting time. And that was an optional time that like almost all of the kids in that program chose to come in and write.
I feel like a lot of what you're saying is so important for building agency for writers. Mm-hmm. So like what you just described is unbelievable for building agency. But I also want to go back to the idea of the writing workshop and kids setting goals and creating plan boxes and being kind of the captain of their own work and having in much the way that I do, right? Like I sit down and I'm writing and I'm like, okay, my goal for today is to complete this. And if I do it, then I get to do that. There's that have to and get to, right?
But isn't that like temptation bundling or something? Like there's an actual psych term for it, like where you bundle two things together in order to do this, you have to do that.
It works for me. If I get this done, I can do that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's what you're offering kids by saying, you know, if you get those two paragraphs done, then you get to do your green belt writing. And how mm-hmm. cool is that for a kid to set that goal? And I guess the other thing that I would add to it as a wonder, and maybe if I weren't in a coach situation, I might set this up if I were in a classroom situation, is what if kids, I'm going to just say like sometimes like I have to do some writing warm up before I get deep into the hard writing that I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Like I sit down and I have a little routine with myself. I've written about it. Like I do my... I might do my Wordle. I might like catch up with my words with friends. I might write a little blurb. I might write a few comments and then I get into my deep writing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like giving kids that set of warm-ups, right?
Yes.
Like if they learn that they are the type of writer who, like I am, and not everybody is the type of writer who needs this little warm-up to get going.
Right.
I think it's a really nice thing to teach into.
Mm-hmm. I just need to shut off all my technology and have no distractions, which is really hard when you're in a classroom, but it is doable when we can think about, you know, if these are the group of kids who need that, then let's put them near each other. And the group of kids who are like you, Melanie, we can try and strategically place them in a spot to help them do what they need to get going. I'm going to throw out one other thing. Lisa Eichholt and Patricia Vitale Riley wrote a book, Writing Clubs, Fostering Choice, Collaboration, and Community in the Writing Classroom. And in that book, they suggest two types of writing clubs, one of which is a standalone club. And these are clubs that function separate from other aspects of the writing workshop. And it's basically an opportunity for students to gather by choosing a mode of writing. So they can be formed around genres, favorite authors, characteristics of writing. And basically when students are
working, you know what, like along those lines, I'm interrupting you. Sorry, mm-hmm. not sorry.
It's so fine.
We currently have a newspaper club going, which mm-hmm. is basically a alone writing club. The kids are all contributing to the newspaper club, and it's an after school little program, and they love it. So
right. Yeah, I mean, they have a level of autonomy, and they're probably making a lot of their own decisions. And whether they are meeting for a couple weeks at a time, in between units of study, after school, whenever it is, it's their club.
And what's really cool about this particular thing, and again, I'm not going to say it was inspired by Lisa and Patty, but I have read that book. And so probably at some point it inspired me. Mm-hmm. But the kids are working on their pieces in between writing club because they're motivated in doing it. Like they come up to me during the time in between when we're meeting. They're like, mm-hmm. I did the interview. You got to check out the comic I made. Like I'm working on a new news article. Mm-hmm. Like they're all into it and it's their thing. So again, like a very purposeful type of greenbelt writing. Mm-hmm. So closing it down, let's just talk about what else we need in order to really get greenbelt writing off and running. I will say that Kristen, when she got that classroom slice of life story challenge going for her classroom, got everybody inexpensive notebooks, like mm-hmm. I think dollar store sort of notebooks, and she splurged and got flare pens. Mm-hmm. Nothing like flare pens to get kids going.
Right. So it's materials that might be fresh or new. Who doesn't like having a new notebook? And not everyone's going to do this on paper, and that's okay. Perhaps you are helping kids create a new writer's notebook template or an independent writing project template in Google Slides. It doesn't matter what it is, but something that feels new and fresh is a nice way to start this work off.
Maybe one of my favorite things about it is that when you think about the materials, it's a totally flexible thing. Mm-hmm. It's like whatever you think is going to work and whatever's going to make it exciting and generate that kind of energy within your classroom. So whether it's notebooks or flare pens or fresh paper choices or a different colored folder, it's how you present it and how you sell it and how you keep it going with the energy that goes all around it.
I want to just talk about one thing that you said before we close out. You said a new folder. And I think that that is actually a necessity because we want this writing to feel separate from the in-process writing that kids are doing, that they might be housing in their writing workshop folder. And I think that having a different folder does communicate a message that this is separate. Maybe they decorate the folder, maybe they don't. It doesn't matter, but it's like another place. So it just feels like it's separate. And also, work doesn't get lost or mixed in with their writing workshop work because we know how much paper can accumulate and how quickly it can accumulate.
I think that goes back to, again, the very beginning. And if you come away with nothing else from this podcast, think about greenbelt writing as something separate from writing workshop writing that is a parallel but really important add-on to the type of writing lives that kids have.
Right. And so we know kids are actively searching for opportunities that are going to allow them to have choice. And so if you are feeling like your writing workshop is no longer joyful, think about greenbelt writing.
Could be exactly what you need.
Thank you for listening to the Two Writing Teachers podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the items we mentioned in this episode, as well as ways to connect with us. For more about the teaching of writing, head over to the Two Writing Teachers blog at twowritingteachers.org. If you liked what you heard today, please share it with your friends and colleagues, post about it on social media, like, subscribe, and leave us ratings and reviews. Our music is by Lemon Music Studio. If you'd like to connect with us, email us at contact@twowritingteachers.org. Thanks again for listening. Let's teach, learn, and write on together.